Sony's exclusive SP2 mechanism provides smoother winding for longer tape life.
Sounds like
technology.
It's like the same things they say in like condom ads.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is comedian Joseph Scrimshaw. We talk about comedic theory and even managed to fit atheism in there, somewhere.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Hi.
And Tim Cassette Tape Wick.
Oh, God. We're going to bring that up.
Yeah.
All right.
We're making it happen.
Right. Now this whole thing is all about
cassette tape. Say hi, cassette tape.
Hi, cassette tape. Oh.
Hi, cassette tape.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
And our guest this week is local comedian Joseph Scrimshaw.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello, Joseph.
It's great to have you here. You have a show, Obsessed, that you do where we do vilification tennis at the Brightlink Bowl. Right?
Sometimes. I do. These are both things that are true that you and I know that we're telling the podcast audience.
That's right.
Yeah, so it's a conversation.
We're filling them in on the secret.
There goes
obsessed.
The fourth wall.
Damn. Yeah. Obsessed with Joseph Scrimshaw.
Yeah.
Yes.
Would you say like that's kind of like your main show you do most of the time, like your standby comedic?
Well, right now,
efforts?
That's the main thing I'm doing locally.
Locally.
So that's what I'm mostly doing in Minneapolis right
sure.
now, but I'm touring and performing at conventions and all sorts of stuff outside of town.
Oh, you did the Joko Crazy Cruise too. John Colton.
That was a local comedian there, but local was Caribbean at the time.
Local was stranded on a boat. And
everyone's always a local something to wherever they are.
Sure, I suppose that's true. You've got a Kickstarter going right now too.
Yep, it is called Flaw Fest, and excuse me, I'm drinking beer. It actually came out of the Jonathan Colton Cruise.
Oh.
I did a show that was all different sort of stories and bits about various human flaws that I perceive myself to have. And a lot of the musicians really liked it, which was awesome. The audience really loved it, so I wanted to make a good recording of it.
Sure.
To show at the Brightlink Bowl that I'm going to do in September. But also there's kind of this conversation that happened on the cruise about how often people do new work.
Mm-hmm.
And since it was a mixture of comedians and musicians, there was a lot of kind of back and forth about, does it take more time to write jokes or write music and that? So I thought it'd be a cool thing to ask, in particular, a lot of the musicians who are on the cruise, like, hey, will you write songs inspired by bits or jokes from the show itself?
Oh, that's brilliant.
So what the Kickstarter is to help support the actual comedy show, but also most of the money is to pay the musicians for their time to write these brand new songs. And a lot of them are, like, great musicians who haven't been writing a lot of new material lately. Like, in particular, Paul and Storm and John Roderick are both, like, great, amazing musicians,
awesome.
But
yeah.
they don't
hilarious
turn
guys.
Stuff out.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to force some new music out of some cool people.
Squeeze it out.
Exactly. I can't help but to feel that this is, like, you're a fan of these guys, and you're just, like, you just want more from them, and so you're doing your part to, like, it's like a selfish... You know what I mean? Like, like it's like if I was a big fan of someone, I could be like, hey, guy, you should do this. Like,
yes and no. But there's plenty of just absolute egotism in it as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because they'll be writing songs about my bits.
Oh, yeah.
But also a fan of the fans on the cruise. And one of the really cool things is that they are very, very supportive.
Hmm.
And I think a lot of the challenge of new work is you write stuff that you like and that everybody likes. And then, like, you hold yourself up to that. Your own standard of what you did before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what was really cool about this particular cruise is there was this super supportive thing of, like, just do something new because we want to hear new things. So I think it's cool, not only for myself as a fan of these guys, but hopefully for other people.
Yeah. I know awesome. I write a lot of songs for the dregs that get performed once. And sometimes they go over well and sometimes they don't go over well. But if the band doesn't like them, that's like it. That's
really?
All that ever happens. I wrote a song for Convergence a couple of years ago. It was a love song, but it was a math love song called Square Root of Two. My love for you is irrational as the square root of two.
Oh, yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, well, once. got performed once.
Did the audience like it?
Yeah, they loved it. They thought it was great.
Why is the band being difficult?
Because, you know...
Why is the band being difficult?
Have you met my band?
Drags?
Yeah. they're all charming individually.
They're wonderful.
They form some Voltron of hate? Is that the
But, I mean, that as a comedian, that can be a problem. You know, you come up with this funny thing, and you do it once, and you're like, I'm never... No, that's it. That's all the only time this is ever going to happen.
I had a roommate that was in a band that had a similar sentiment. He said that if you're in a band and your band isn't your favorite band, then why the fuck are you in a band? Like, he kind of felt like if you're not, if your love and your adoration isn't for your efforts and the product you're making.
Or if you're not at least in your top three. You know?
Yeah, then, you know, maybe you should either do something better or...
Was this a rock band?
The Notwells.
Okay.
They're local. Yeah.
Which is funny because with comedians, especially like stand-up comics, but I mean comedians in general, it tends to be more like self-loathing like I am the least funny person I know. Oh my god, you're so much fun. Oh my god, oh god, you know, Carlin. Oh, you know, like, and people get all like, if I could be a tenth as funny as, you know, Louis C.K., like that would be great. Whereas, you know, which is funny, I mean, because stand-up is such an egotistical practice. You have to go out there and own the stage and any kind of comedy.
Kind of
you have
one,
to think
one
that
person
you're funny.
Circle jerk. Kind of.
But off stage, there's so much like, oh, God, like, oh, no, I'm not funny. You're funny. You know, you were good. I was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
And I think in music, you almost, you would get the opposite. You know, the people who are like, they, like, oh, that band sucks. My band is good. My band is who you should come to see. You know, like, they're all right. You know, it's interesting. So that the comedy music convergence thing is going to be interesting to hear.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things I like about comedy music. Obviously, like the Dregs or, you know, Jonathan Colton and things is...
Garfunkel and Oates.
Yeah, Garfunkel and Oates.
Sure.
Even like nerdcore, like MC Lars or MC Frontalot and stuff is always
Lajoie.
Interesting for that. Yeah. I'm excited to see the show that you're doing.
Yeah, me too. I like the show, so I'm happy to be doing it again.
Yeah, I'm excited to see you too.
Were there any parts of it that you found like writing, like in this or any of the things that you've been writing lately? Because it seems like you're a very prolific comedian.
I
would say that. And
yes.
and do you ever come across parts where you're like, you just don't have it. You just can't. Do you have any projects you've abandoned? Maybe is more the idea that you couldn't make work no matter how hard you tried.
No, I think of all of them like children, and to me that feels like leaving it in a dumpster, which I wouldn't do.
Sure.
It's just like, that's a problem child that needs extra attention, and maybe I'll go send that one to live with my aunt for a little while. But I will never give up on it. The stuff I liked about this show in particular is that, you know, it's a mix of kind of very, very personal stuff, but it's still very relatable because it's all about kind of flaws. But in particular, the reaction from the crews was that there was a lot of like kind of little specific bits or big picture things that they really latched onto. And I think that's the most frustrating thing about writing a lot of content is that people make associations with you based on your material. And I want as many people as possible to know this show because I like the way the crews audience reacted to it and make these associations. And they send me jokes on Twitter, and there is a thing I don't need to explain, but there's a thing involving a character called Mr. Suckface. And someone immediately after the cruise made a Mr. Suckface Twitter handle. So,
awesome.
You know, my character from my show tweets at me every once in a while.
That's awesome.
This show happens to have those kind of powerful things that people relate to. And that I think you can't manufacture. You just put your stuff out there. And the stuff that really makes sense to people and they relate to, and it seems to be in this show, so I want it.
For sure.
I want to get this show out there more.
It's a certain kind of fulfilling.
Well, I you did a show earlier this year, Minnesota Nice. Or no.
How to Swear Like a Minnesotan.
And the interesting thing about that is I've gone to a lot of your shows, and I know a lot of people that have gone to a lot of your shows, and Pat and I, my wife and I, noticed that when we went to that show, we were the only people in the audience that we knew.
Yeah,
we
secretly
nobody,
angry Minnesotans at that audience. But awesome.
But it was really interesting that you tapped into a completely different audience than you've normally tapped into with that show.
Yeah.
Because when I was talking to Sarah, your wife, when I was talking to her about it, she said that she didn't know anybody at any of those shows.
No.
You know, or maybe a couple of people at each show.
People just lost their mind about the title and the photo, and it sold out in like 2 days. Like
that's
a run of four shows sold out in 2 days. And like, and yeah, that's a big part of it too, of like, you know, there are certain shows. The show I did the year before was called The Sad Vampire Comedy Hour.
That was funny.
And a bunch of geeks came out because of the title and the photo.
Sure.
You know, and sometimes, you know, sometimes shows that are a little bit more personal, like this one that I'm doing the Kickstarter for, like, it doesn't have as strong of a hook for people who have no idea who I am, which is another reason that I want to do the Kickstarter for it.
Sure.
Right.
New That's audience. Awesome. New.
And we will make sure to have a link to that Kickstarter.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys should all go donate to that Kickstarter if you want to be cool like us, because we're cool and we did.
They are cool.
I'm just saying, peer pressure.
By the time this episode airs, I will have donated to the Kickstarter.
You know, Tim, you could have just said, yep, I donated to the Kickstarter, and no one would have known the difference.
You could have just lied.
I was on vacation when it launched. Give me a break.
Yes, you were.
Must be nice.
Did you not have a phone? Because I still remember you being on Facebook and telling us about all the monuments and shit.
I just assumed that you pre-wrote all those tweets.
I did actually. I went and took pictures before we left for vacation so that I could just upload the pictures on a timer.
I like the idea of, like, pardon me, Tim dying on vacation and these tweets going up automatically, like alternate universe Tim that didn't die continuing on his ghost vacation.
Die before he donates to my Kickstarter.
Well, okay.
Should have pissed me off this week. Well, I died.
That pissed me off.
Damn it, you guys.
So,
it's funny because, like, one of the things I love about having gotten into, you know, Vilification Tennis and all this other comedy stuff is I love comedy and I love comedic theory and I love, like, geeking out about, like, why things are funny. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that to get to, I like these comedy Kickstarters to watch that kind of evolution.
The process is so much more transparent.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's, have you always been interested in, like when you were a kid, were you interested in stand-up comedy and, like, and comedy stuff? Like,
I always liked comedy. I had a chip on my shoulder about stand-up when I started doing it, I think, just kind of from... There wasn't the kind of hipsterism that there was now, but looking back on it, it was hipsterism. Like, I thought computers were dumb, and I used a typewriter. Stand-up was stupid, and sketch comedy was good.
Sure.
But when I was in college, I took a class on comic theory, and that really kind of solidified a lot of my opinions and just the way I see the world and comedy in general.
What was your favorite sketch comedy growing up?
I just grew up liking Saturday Night Live for the most part.
Yeah,
and I think kind of the, you know, Mike Myers early stuff and Chris Farley, like, when I look back, it's like, it was only about 3 years. But like everybody, I have the bias that those are the good years.
Yeah.
Right.
And I look, you know, I overlook the shit. And like Phil Hartman, I think, was brilliant. And
everyone has their own golden era for Saturday Night Live.
But it's always kind of shitty.
Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
It's always back now, you're like, 20 years ago, kind of shit.
You don't remember that
two
one
good sketches
for sure. You never remember the terrible sketch that they did like 5 times for some reason that was terrible. I mean, because you remember
that
the
sketch
good,
every cast.
Right. You remember that one sketch that was just golden.
I remember being pissed that Chris Farley kept coming back and not doing anything new, because the first one was great. And the other one, I was like, oh, he screams and falls down.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now we know that it was lots of drugs.
And shitty writers.
And lots of really bad writing.
Drugs and a really bad inner ear infection.
See, for me, a big part of it was, like, Kids in the Hall was something that I really liked, and I think one of it was because it was weird like I was weird. And I got it, and that was, and the kids in my school weren't really into it, necessarily. They thought it was too weird or too gay or whatever you want to, you know, because it was really weird and really gay. And like, and for me, like, I just, like, that was something that I was just like, oh my God, I could do that. And not in any kind of, like, egotistical, I guess a little egotistical to watch something and think you could do it, but in that more like, I want to do that.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing, is if you connect to it and say, that looks like fun.
Yeah, I want to be crazy and wearing costumes and being stupid and, and yet funny and weird and
showing my age. Mine was Carol Burnett Show.
Oh,
I was totally obsessed with the Carol Burnett Show. And my favorite was Tim Conway, because it was another Tim.
What's a Tim Conway?
What? and I liked his character, the boss guy who always said, Mrs. O'Higgins.
Tim Uren reminds me of Tim Conway.
He does a little bit.
Yeah,
that's because all the Tims are alike.
Yeah.
They're all the same.
All Tims that do comedy are the same.
The race of Tims.
So, I mean, Joseph and I, we've done some panels on comic theory at Convergence.
Mm-hmm.
More, I think Joseph has done panels on comic theory and has invited me to be a participant in those panels, which I certainly appreciate.
And you scheduled yourself.
Was it pity or...
No, he's scheduling, so it was easy to work with.
Yeah.
No, it was great, yeah.
And I... You're... your thoughts on comic theory. I just want to kind of get to that. I feel like we haven't really...
The philosophy of comedy.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's the whole, you know, obviously this podcast is, you know, the religious stuff, right? Or anti-religion, right?
Well, it's atheism, comedy, and geekery.
By not talking about religion, we are an atheist podcast as well.
Yeah. Excellent.
Do they dovetail?
The what?
Your religious ideals, your what you think of religion and what you think of comedy? Is there any, like...
Overlap?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think
he thinks comedy is real.
Comedy is real. Yeah. It's all around us. I think it is very force-like. I think it is very zen-like. I think comedy makes sense to me the way religion would if it worked. I'm not a big fan of organized religion, but I think like comedy has like some basic tenets that if you look at this law and you believe this law, you will always see it occur. Like I think all comedy is based on contrast, and even if there isn't a literal verbal setup line, there's always a setup of some kind before the punchline, even if it is just our agreed on cultural knowledge or
visual
attitude towards something.
Fat guy, skinny guy.
So I think the religious thing for me, and then there's just the humanity of it that I think there's poorly done jokes, but even the nastiest well-done joke is still going to create some sort of happiness by causing catharsis and laughter.
Yeah.
So I think there's a very positive thing to it. I think there's something that's like deep and true that's across all sorts of humanity, regardless of culture. And then on the more dickish side for me, I get kind of pissy when people say that it is totally mysterious and can't be analyzed. I don't like it when people
for
are just
sure.
like,
there's no
way to know why that duck joke worked and that other duck didn't. It was just, who knows? Like, well, there's lots of ways to know. Like,
yeah.
Absolutely.
I think one of the things that, it's actually the name of your production company, but we've talked about it in a few of the comic theory panels, is the joking envelope, which I think is a really great concept. I wanted to know if you would kind of describe what that is.
It started out with an essay from Sigmund Freud, but it's basic idea that there is sort of a social space, sort of a literal joking envelope where people agree that we are joking now. So just in the most basic way, like if you're at work and you're standing around by, you know, the photocopier or the fax machine or the water cooler or whatever technology now exists, offices that people stand around and, like, we know that if somebody says, like, I heard your golf game sucked, like, you're in a joking envelope, and that's okay. But if it's in the middle of a meeting, we're discussing something else, and another dude just raises his hand and goes, by the way, here you suck at golf. Culturally, we're not in the joking envelope.
Yeah.
So
right.
it's awkward and
like
horrible.
That.
And
I wasn't aware of that.
I think there's a lot of, like, very, very subtle permutations of that. And I know you guys are all involved in vilification tennis, offensive comedy. And I think that that's where there's, to me, like, a huge breakdown in agreement about where and when offensive comedy works. I think vilification tennis works because you guys say from the get-go, we're playing a game where we're trying to say the most offensive things we can think of. And then the audience gets to decide whether or not they want to be in the joking envelope. You guys have clearly invited them in. But like a lot of the stand-ups who are getting in trouble for doing rape jokes, they're not setting up any joking envelope. People are just coming down to a club for comedy, and they think being offensive is funny, so they're in. They do a bit about their grandma, and then they do a bit about rape, and nobody is in the place. Nobody's made the agreement that that's where they are.
I would say some people, because I know I go into a comedy club with the understanding that everything. Because I, my personal opinion, so my envelope is everything. I think everything's on the table and everything's okay. So I would never. Nothing's ever going to offend me in that way.
I think
but
if you're familiar with a comedian and their reputation, they can carry that envelope with them. Then, if you're buying tickets to go see Anthony Jeselnik, you might know that you're in for, like, a rougher time comedy-wise.
I think that would be a good example of being in the joking envelope. But I think a lot of the people who are getting hammered for it are people who are just doing, like,
open
mics where people are just, like... There's no... At that point, to me, there's, like, no value of it. Like, when somebody comes to a vilification tennis show, they are coming saying, I want to be challenged.
They've signed that social contract.
And if not, they're told right away at the top, like, that's what it is. So they can go, oh, not for me, I'm going to leave.
There's also funny to it too. I mean, a lot of these open mics, I think, are probably one of the problems is that these aren't tried and true. These are people who are just trying out for the first time, so they get up there, and maybe they're not very funny at all yet, whatever. And so if they just get up there and they're, my sex life is so hard. You know, it seems like I spend most of my time chasing girls down the street, screaming after them, trying to knock them over and rape them. You know what I mean? Like, no one's going to think that's funny because it isn't funny in general.
And I think that there is a problem with that in our culture right now because enough people have done offensive humor successfully that there's a whole batch of people who just think the farther you push it, the better. Right.
Oh, that's like, funny because it's offensive.
Yes, and in general, I think that's true of comedy of, like, you need to make sure that the contrast between the expectation and what's broken is really severe and enough to make people laugh. But I think that there is starting to be a little bit of a generation where people are not doing what vilification does, which sets up the game, and are just walking around thinking, like, retard, fag, and rape are comedy gold. Right. Well, and then you're like, they are in the context where you're offering some catharsis by showing that it's wrong or playing a game where we agree to say the most horrible things we can, knowing that nobody means it. But when you're not setting off that game, I think there's just a lot of comedians who are running around.
Spin the bottle versus knocking someone over and kissing them.
In Ville, there are times where we tell people we're going to be offensive, and no one really gets offensive, and the audience remembers it as offensive because that's what we told them.
Yeah.
We told them it was going to be an offensive show, and we make them laugh, and then they leave, and they're like, oh man, those guys are filthy. But no one even said anything really filthy. It's that. You setting and managing expectations. Yeah, part
it,
of that.
It makes me wonder if you know how in the 90s there was this like complete glut of comics that were doing observational style after Seinfeld got popular and like you know what's the deal with kind of like a thing and then that got so tired and tropish that it died. And I wonder if this over the top offensive, not funny, just offensive thing is there's going to be so much of it that eventually it's just going to be like meh.
Backlash.
Oh, you're boring, you know, like, and it's just going to die down and there's going to be a rebirth of like super, you know, weird or who knows what the next thing will be. But
I would love weird and intelligent. That would be great because I think audiences can handle
cough mask.
Yeah, I agree. Cough mask.
So I think
we're going to move on to our five questions.
All right.
Absolutely.
Are you ready?
Sure.
The gauntlet.
I even sent them to you ahead of time.
So yes, I remember that you sent them to me. Let's see if I remember what
they
were. All right,
so question one is, what is the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days? And it doesn't have to be in the theater.
Oh, okay. I rewatched Cabin in the Woods with some buddies on Friday.
Oh, that movie.
Yes, and I like that very much.
I really like that movie, and I'm not a horror fan.
Yeah.
So there's tons of jokes in that movie that I don't even get.
I know that I don't get them,
but it amuses me that I don't get them.
If that makes any sense. If you're aware of like the cultural tropes of horror movies, you can be aware of them without seeing them, I feel like. You know, and that's all you need to be in on.
The reason I like it, it goes with some of the stuff I was saying about comedy, of that it isn't just making fun of the tropes, it's commenting on them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it is very successful. I think it's a very successful critique of torture porn like Saw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for sure. We're just saying like that... Not that kind of stuff that just cutting people up for cutting them up is not of value.
Well,
there has to be a thought
the
behind
shock
it.
Well, and then there's people whose job it is to just sit there sipping coffee like, there they go. Who had money on that? Like, they are the audience of Saw, blasé watching people being tortured and desensitized. Because it's very all in.
There was a review written. I saw it at Butnumathon a couple of years ago. And after Butnumathon, and I'll link to this, I got to find this review, because one of the people there wrote this really insightful review about it once the movie came out, because he didn't want to spoil it.
Right.
And he's like, do not read this until you've seen the movie. And he reviewed it and basically talked about how the entire film is a critique of horror film fans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And even up to the very ending, the idea that horror film fans will never be satisfied.
Like, we are the gods that are being appeased.
We are the gods that must be appeased. Yeah, like we are the gods to whom these people must be sacrificed.
Well, I was reading something about, you know, similar to the Evil Dead remake that came out just a few months ago. Someone was saying, like, how the fuck can they do an Evil Dead movie after Cabin in the Woods has... said all there is to say about the Cabin in the Woods horror movie.
Right.
Like, and just kind of talking the same thing. Like, like these questions were recently addressed and answered.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, no matter what the underlying critique of it is, it's still a really good horror movie.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's a lot to be had in it that's not a critique. Like, I like just the tension of, it, you know, it's rare to have a film that at the end, you really don't know what you want because we're used to being trained to, like, yeah, of course save the world. Of course the hero should live. And the fact that it's a choice between those two.
You're actually rooting for everyone to die.
I think it's pretty successfully. I think most people probably root for the hero to live. But it's also, to me, it successfully almost removes rooting.
Yeah.
Because it's just sort of like,
well, because
the world ends because the pothead was accurately paranoid? Cool. Yeah.
Like, it's lose-lose scenario.
Well, and just the way they sit there at the end, just light, just smoking the joint, just like, all right.
Yeah.
I mean, well, fuck it, right? Like, I mean, like, that's kind of how I felt. I was like, fuck it, guys, go for it. I want to see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So question number two, what's your favorite atheist character? We actually managed to work atheism into this podcast
Awesome. Well, I don't know if I know a catalog of who atheist characters are, but when you sent it to me today, the first thing that popped in my head was Bugs Bunny.
I don't know
if he has a religious affiliation, but he seems like he must be an atheist. There's something about Elmer Fudd that seems fundamentalist to me.
Well, and Daffy Duck has all the things with the creator drawing the things on him and erasing.
Duck-a-muck.
So Daffy Duck is aware of his creator.
Yeah,
but Bugs, his creator is Bugs.
The Bug, Bugs turns out to be the one doing the drawing.
So
right?
Bugs doesn't believe in himself.
Bugs is God.
I just think there's something about just that classic sort of trickster character who undercuts everything and doesn't really believe in anything except for maybe making Elmer Fudd's life difficult.
Well, he doesn't believe in anything but himself. He always believes in his own capabilities of achieving the goal of making Elmer Fudd look like an idiot.
Yeah.
I feel
making
like
it duck season.
Yeah.
It is not.
Right. Exactly.
I feel like all the Bugs Bunny cartoons are always like Bugs Bunny doing his own thing and then, you know, oh, he's being hunted. Oh, he took the wrong turn at Albuquerque. Oh, you know, there's. I kind of want to see like a short cartoon that's just if Elmer Fudd never hunted him, just like Bugs Bunny.
What does he do?
Boring ass life in the rabbit hole.
He would go out and fuck with people.
He would
dress up like a girl.
He could just hide from Elmer Fudd. Yeah,
if you watch the original Looney Tunes cartoons, that is the original Looney Tunes cartoons. Bugs is typically the instigator.
Oh, okay.
And so then it kind of morphs into the classic Looney Tunes. There is also, interestingly, there's a companion to Duck-a-Muck, the cartoon where Bugs is the creator. There's a companion where Bugs is getting fucked with by the animator. It's one of the least popular Looney Tunes cartoons ever because nobody wanted to see Bugs get fucked with.
Less popular than the
my opinion, I think.
The propaganda racists. Like
it's less popular than the because there's some historical value to the propaganda propaganda World War II racist
stuff. I'll buy that.
But that just sounds like it is robbing Bugs of his power.
It robs Bugs.
He is the one who should be fucking with people. Just like I think we should all be fucking with our own lives.
Good, nice.
There we go. Bring it back around. Third question is, what's your geekiest hobby? What's the hobby that other geeks hear about it and they say that's really fucking geeky?
I don't think I have any hobby that's geekier than other geeks. I think I have hobbies that other geeks question.
All right, that works.
All right.
Well, I think it's just interest. I think I love geeks. I love them to death, but I am one of them. But we are big enough now that we are capable of groupthink. In a way that we were not capable of when I was younger. We were capable of just deciding en masse over like a week. Like, suddenly, we own bacon. We like bacon. We're going to yell at anybody who doesn't like bacon.
I don't like
we're
going to get
we have a sort of a power into groupthink. So I think
zombies are the best.
I think there's some things that that I obsess on in a geeky way, but I'm normally shy about talking about because they're not in the normal sort of geek canon. Like
that totally counts.
I really like 24. I've rewatched 24 many times.
Ooh.
Because I have a part of me that can accept in a way that I think is not always popular that even if something isn't good and I can say, that's not good, but I still enjoy it.
And it's entertaining.
That's how I feel about Lex. It's not good, but I like it.
Yeah, we're not gonna have this argument now. Not right now. No,
we have this is at least the second time on this podcast we haven't had this argument.
Yeah, it gets
it's like
ugly.
The tenth time in our marriage.
it gets ugly. It's ugly.
Unlike Lex. Uh-huh. All right. So our fourth question is: what is your favorite sandwich? And please details.
I forgot to think about this one, but I will say a number 8 at Jimmy John's.
Which one is the eight?
It is the Billy Club. The Beach Club.
Yeah, it's
Annette Funicello.
In a
sandwich. No, it's the Billy Club, which is, I believe, roast beef and ham and mayonnaise and mustard and lettuce and tomatoes and bread.
Yellow mustard or Dijon mustard?
Dijon.
Do you make any additions or subtractions on that? Or just...
No, I don't.
All right.
Sometimes I think of doing it because I think they take you more seriously at Jimmy John's than you
do.
Like, they have more respect for you if you're like, and hold the whatever, or stuff the thing, or, yeah.
Stuff the thing and hold the whatever.
At the same time,
sex instructions.
I don't smoke a lot of pot, but I should get high and go in there and see it.
Yeah.
Give me a number eight with the whatever held.
You'll come out with a job. That's what'll happen. Go to a Jimmy John's high, they'll put you to work.
Yeah, give me clip-on dreads and I'll be good to go.
Dirty fingernails.
Oh, am I up? Okay, number five. What's the stupidest thing anybody's ever said to you about your atheism? We really haven't covered it, but you and I have had conversations.
Yeah, long story short, I don't know... I don't call myself an atheist just because I haven't spent the time doing the research. And anything that even remotely tends into the political, I don't like to get into unless I feel like, I've really researched this. Like,
sure.
I know what it means to be a Democrat, so I say that. But, like, you know, if there's, like, a city council member that I'm not going to say anything if I don't know him, but, which is a weird analogy. But, in general, what Tim and I have talked about before in general, I would... what was it that the way you described it in our conversation?
I describe it as hopeful atheism.
Hopeful atheism, yeah, because I just don't want there to be nothing when I die. Like, I don't really particularly believe in any particular god or see evidence for it, and I don't really like organized religion. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get mad at geeks because they have groupthink over bacon. That sort of tells you how I think about organized religion. But I just, I think I'm a very, like, stupidly hopeful person to the point where, like, sometimes I do things after I know, like, this isn't going to work out, but I'm going to keep doing it, because maybe.
Sure.
So for me, the thought of, you know, of there being nothing is just really fucking annoying.
Yeah,
so
I
want there to be something just because I like life. I would like existence in some way to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel the same way, even though I'm pretty much of the opinion that it's not going to happen. And I know that when I get there, it's not going to bother me, per se.
I wish there were ghosts, because I like the idea of ghosts. I think that sounds awesome. Like, the idea of there being ghosts that just wander around and haunt you, and they think it's neat. But, like, they don't, and there's not. But that's, it's a ghost talking Joseph Scrimshaw.
So now, having talked briefly about your opinion about religion, and I don't know if anybody's ever said something stupid to you about...
Well, the weird thing is, I don't talk to a lot of people about it, but when I say what I kind of just described in general, people are like, yeah, I understand. So people don't say negative things about that. I guess probably the thing that popped to mind when you sent me the email of questions is that I did go to a Catholic school when I was in, like, second and third grade, and it was a pretty relaxed Catholic school. But they did try to make me go to confession when I was in second grade.
Mm-hmm.
My mother stepped in and said, "He's in second grade. He has nothing to confess.
And they
he likes his Yoda action figure too much? No, that's not... we're not going to have him
you
confess.
You put the force
about
before
that.
God. That's...
One of the things that we had to do was we had to fill out... There was a crossword puzzle, and I filled out dog instead of God for the clue... And the teacher got really mad at me, and I was like, "What the fuck? God made my dog, right? I like my dog. That's
awesome.
A valid answer, right?"
Yeah.
That is.
That's pretty stupid. That nun sounds dumb.
Yeah, she was.
What a bitch.
Yeah. Sister bitch.
She's got a habit of being a cunt to kids.
Oh my god. Oh, there we go. All right.
The point is that
there's another listener lost.
I just want to say your dog sounds awesome. If we lost a listener because someone said cunt, we've lost listeners long
before. Oh, no, I know that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You could just do a half an hour of audience losing.
We could. It would be so easy.
Challenge accepted.
I mean,
I have a lot of unpopular opinions.
Yeah, to challenge, like, the nerd geek thing. One time we talked about how tired we are of people trying to bring Firefly back and, like, to just let it go, man. Like, that ship has sailed. Like, you want to piss off some nerds.
Did you get comments back?
Surprisingly, no. None.
No, no, guys.
You have on
guys.
Facebook, though, when you've said it before, when people have posted things about, like, oh, please, reunion, oh, please. Even, like, it's over. The show's over. They canceled it because it wasn't all that great. Goodbye.
I don't have a lot of patience for it. I liked Firefly. I won't.
It was great.
I mean, but shit. You know.
Some things just end, and
but
it's okay.
Yeah, it's over.
Let Joss Whedon move on
with
his career.
Enjoy what you got.
Right.
Be happy about it.
Because I
instead
guarantee...
of complaining about what's not there.
Yeah.
Or, which is a fine example of why...
religion.
It's a fine example of why I don't believe in
no,
God.
I'm,
because I'm enjoying what I have rather than worrying about what isn't there.
Firefly as an allegory for accepting that there is no afterlife. There it is. There it is. All right.
Boom.
Awesome.
The brown coats of the Lutherans. So,
I can't agree with that. I might change my answer. The most offensive thing that's been said to me about religion is browncoats are Lutheran. Bullshit.
Do an entire another podcast about that debate.
Just why
I like that you said it as he was finishing his beer, and I could see in his eyes he was like, "Quick, swallow the beer, Narnia."
Oh,
don't let that go. They're about to end the podcast.
That's always in my eyes. Finish the beer and argue.
Sounds like just another day. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate you making it out. We've been Geeks Without God.
We totally have a giveaway.
Oh yeah, that's right. We have a giveaway. We are going to be giving away a copy of your CD, Verbing the Noun.
Awesome.
We want our audience to leave a comment with their favorite atheist joke or joke about atheists on this podcast
episode. Yeah.
And we'll pick one at random to win a copy of your CD.
Awesome.
And that'll be fun.
Yeah, that will be fun.
Because we said so.
Yes.
A priest, a child molester, and a liar walk into a bar. He orders a drink.
I'll give you a CD later.
I'm just saying, that's a joke.
I accept, that's a joke.
You can find Joseph's Kickstarter for Flawfest, a comedy and music album. Hit him up there. Donate enough to get yourself a CD or something sweet.
Even more. Donate all your money.
Donate all of your money. And
he won't even let you. The top is like $500.
Yeah, it's already gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll make more. There'll be more rewards.
Oh. More rewards.
I'll find a way to take your money.
No doubt.
Please do go support it.
Absolutely.
Thank you guys. A great Kickstarter.
For sure. We're Geeks Without God. Bye.
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 I really, really like Bugs Bunny.
We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks,
we're geeks,
we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
we're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
You've not placed a salve on my pain.